Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace rolling on from Bridgestone Arena at Barrel House. The Predators in action tonight against the San Jose Sharks. Nashville trying to extend the point streak to 15, and that would tie a franchise record that was set during the year that they ended up winning the President's Trophy. That was 2017-18. So we'll see if they can keep it going tonight against the Sharks. And the Predators announced earlier today that Jeremy Lauzon is now week-to-week with a lower body injury. They have called up Mark Delgazzo. They did that yesterday. He practiced with the group, so he will be in there tonight. So that's three straight games Nashville has lost a defenseman to a week-to-week injury. So it's not just a day here or a day there. So they are really getting tested with their depth. We'll get more into that a little bit later this hour. Max Hurst will join us, and we'll talk Preds in our next segment. But first, D-Mace, how are you doing, by the way?
Good to see you. Yeah, good to see you too, Willie.
Getting ready for the March Madness here?
Absolutely.
Got to fill out the old brackets.
Yeah.
It all gets cranking up tonight.
Yep.
The first four starts, and I always forget that it starts on Tuesday. I'm always thinking Wednesday all the games are, but there's a couple tonight, a couple tomorrow, and then the Madness starts on Thursday here. But I wanted to hit you with something that I think illustrates the point of where the Titans are that you guys hit on at the very last segment there last hour. Mm-hmm. I got the email from our good pal, Jimmy Shapiro, who I've never met, but he emails me as much as a lot of other people do. Mm-hmm. Combined, you know, a lot of my friends combined don't email me as much as Jimmy does, but he's always sending out odds from his website, which is now betonline.ag, whatever .ag is. I don't know if that's a dark web or something. What's .ag? I don't even know. Whatever.
Don't know.
But it's a gambling site. So he has kept what the odds are to win the Super Bowl for every team, mm-hmm. and he has done a comparison to what they were for his site on February 12th, right after the Super Bowl, and now what they are after the first wave of free agency, as they define it. So I think there's a lot of people wondering, okay, all these moves, all the money that the Titans are spending, what does this do to their team? What should the expectation level be? We were kicking around that last hour. Just to illustrate it, the Titans were 100-1 before free agency started, and that was in the bottom group, basically. The only team that had longer odds at that point was Carolina, who just had an awful season last year. They were 150-1. Now, after free agency, even after the Titans spend all this money, they are now 150-1, the third longest odds in the league. Carolina is now 250-1. The Patriots are 175-1. The Commanders and the Giants somehow have gone to 125-1. They have better odds than the Titans. That might shock a lot of people here, but I think it just illustrates that this is a new era. And they've got a long way to go before they can compete with the big guys. On paper. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean they can't have a really good year this year, but I think it's perspective from the outside of how many holes they still have to fill. So, do you think that that is a little cruel, a little harsh to have them 150-1? This is to win the Super Bowl. Now, This is not to sneak into the playoffs or anything like that. So that's a different story, right? But to win the Super Bowl, I do think that is eye-opening from afar.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it prior to the start of free agency, they were still more so at the bottom of the, you know, group of 32 in regards to making the playoff, the odds to make the Super Bowl, to win the Super Bowl. It goes from that to even longer odds. Maybe they believe that, you know, the Titans just didn't, one, they have too many holes to fill. And they didn't, at this point, they didn't fill enough of the holes that would have changed, that would have made their odds better after free agency. Now, I'm sure it's going to change again.
Oh,
yes. Once we have the draft. But right now, as we sit, you know, the Titans, they've made some good moves, but I don't think the moves that they made as a whole indicates that they will have a, you know, worst to first type of season. I think they will be better based upon the moves that they made, based upon, you know, the coaches that they have. But I don't think it makes their odds of winning a Super Bowl go up.
Right. And I think that is fair to say is, okay, 150-1 to win the Super Bowl, that's one thing. But can they be a better team than they were last year? That's a reasonable goal to set.
Exactly, yeah.
And also, you're setting it with the idea that this is the stepping stone to where you do want to have odds of winning the Super Bowl. For example, the rest of the division. Houston, 22-1. Jacksonville, 40-1. Colts, 55-1. So it's much better odds of winning the Super Bowl for the other three teams in the division. And the reason I'm pointing this out is I still think when there's so much excitement when you sign a big free agent and you're spending the money, but it doesn't mean you're automatically going to be a lot better. Now, I hope that the guys that they spend end up being good players for them. That's the key. If you're going to spend the money, you need to get value out of these guys, right? Even if you're, quote, overpaying a little bit. The most important thing is not necessarily that you spend a lot of money on them, is are they actually going to fill the hole, not just for this coming season, but hopefully for the next few years, right? Because that's what you need. That's what you need to happen.
Yeah, you need to set your team up, you know, for long-term success, not short-term. You know, not for short-term success. You need to build it for, you know, once we get into what does this team look like, you know, 3-4 years from now? A lot of it is predicated on what they do this season, this offseason, as well as next offseason. Because, again, this is a rebuild. Whether the Titans want to say it or not, this is a complete rebuild to me. And it's a complete rebuild because you changed the quarterback. The person at the helm is different. And he's young. And you don't know as much about him, you know, in regards to how does he change us as an organization. You don't know that yet until he really starts playing. He showed some growth last year, but he also showed that he was a rookie quarterback last year. This season, they will get a better understanding as they surround him with more people. They will get a better understanding of who this quarterback is and can he lead them to where they want to go. All these other teams that are ahead of the Titans in their division, probably with the exception of Indianapolis, I'm trying to figure out, like, why are Indianapolis odds
that much better
than the Tennessee Titans?
I think
that's
a fair question. And if you're the Titans, you're going, I think we can be better than them.
Exactly.
You know?
So if you look at the teams, Jacksonville and Houston, and to an extent Indianapolis, all three of those teams, at least two of them, have a quarterback that has proven he can play big when need to. Trevor Lawrence has proven, hell, he can play big. You watched that Charger game in the playoffs two seasons ago where they were down, you know, 28 points. After throwing four interceptions in the first half, he came back and led his team to a victory. He played big in a big moment. You look at their quarterback in Houston, C.J. Stroud. He lit the NFL on fire last year with his play.
And got huge experience.
Playoff experience. So when you're looking at teams like that as odds makers, the one thing that teams worry about having, they have their quarterbacks. So that automatically is going to make their odds higher than what the Tennessee Titans is. If we knew more about Will Levis, if Will Levis had started the whole season and we had a bigger, you know, sort of a bigger picture of who he is as a quarterback throughout a whole season, maybe their odds would be a little bit different. But because we only saw a snapshot of what he could be, it was some good, but there are also some bad. So, you know, looking at what they did thus far in free agency, you look at it and say, well, I don't know about this Titan team yet. Maybe if they knew more about the quarterback, their odds would be a lot different. I don't think it's necessarily about who they went and got in free because if that was the case, they went and got Cushenberry, who upgrades their offensive line. They went and got Calvin Ridley, who upgrades their receivers. They went and got the kid, the defensive back out of Cincinnati. He upgrades their cornerback position, probably not to a point where you think that they're,
Hope it upgrades, yeah. But remember, they lost Michael
people.
Bunting.
Exactly.
They lost
people too.
The kid, Christian Fulton. So,
exactly.
So you're down guys. You had to have guys
exactly.
In there.
So they got.
So with the net result, you hope is better, but you don't know for sure.
But they went out and got these guys, and you can't tell me that this isn't a better team. I think it's a better team. How much better? I don't know.
Yeah, that's
but
the goal.
They are on paper a better team than they were last year. Why? Because the guys that they brought in, Ridley, Cushenberry, Awuzie, from Cincinnati, those are good players, which automatically makes your team a little bit better than what they were last year. But the one position that no one knows about is the quarterback position. That's the position that is going to make your odds go up or down. If they had a quarterback that everybody knew something about, that everybody felt, okay, this kid's a franchise quarterback, I guarantee you their odds would be a lot greater. But because they don't have that, their odds are low.
Yeah, and you could probably look back at the Houston odds last year.
Exactly.
At this time, they were probably 150 to 1 or more. And then all of a sudden, when people figured out that Stroud was who he was, those odds, you see where they are now,
exactly.
Right? Because he's more of an unquiet. That's the job of Callahan and this group, to see if they can get that kind of play out of Will Levis. Now, if he gets anything close to what Stroud did last year, that would be a great story. I don't know what's a reasonable expectation, but I think that they have taken steps to surround him with players that give him a chance to be successful. I think back to those early Cowboy teams. Mm-hmm. Troy Aikman survived, right, his first year or two where they had nothing around him. And he got clobbered. But then the next thing you know, you got Emmitt Smith. You got Michael Irvin. They started building that offensive line. And now you had a championship team. I think it's reasonable. First of all, if you're Brian Callahan, don't you look at these odds and say, okay, look, I'm going to put these up on the board the first day we gather. And let's make that our goal, to prove everybody that we're a heck of a lot better team than people think we are. Right? That's a great place to start. I keep going back to, from the team perspective, from the messaging, from the marketing, the PR, I think you temper expectations. If you're out there parading around that you spent the most money in free agency, that's a dangerous thing, because I don't think people should expect that much. I want to be the underdog. I want to be the team that the Predators right now are turning out to be, the team that you've tempered expectations, and all of a sudden you're overachieving, and it's a great story. That's kind of what I want the story to be. So if I'm Brian Callahan, I'm telling everybody, look at this. They had us 150 to 1. They had us team number 30 in the league in the summer. Well, I'm here to tell you we're better than that. How much better? You don't define that, right? Mm-hmm. You just say we're going to be better than that.
Well,
and I think on offense especially, that's where I think they have a chance to be much improved over the last couple of years, where they were average. What did we say? How many times did we say? How many points they ended up with? 17.5 points per game. Mm-hmm. Like, for two straight years, that's what their offense has been.
Exactly.
I think they got a chance to be better than that.
Well, they do. I mean, when you add, Calvin Ridley to your receiving core, you add a Cushenberry to your offensive line core, now you got to go out and, get your left tackle. You have to find a way to get you, get that right side solidified. And I believe they will. But it's going to take you – now, listen – It can happen overnight in regards to the Titans going from 6-11 to, was it 6-11 or 6-12?
They were 6-11 last year.
6-11.
Yeah.
They can go from 6-11 to, winning 10 games, winning 9 or 10 games. But the only way that's going to happen is not necessarily about the free agents they brought in. It's not. Because you feel, listen, with free agency, it's hit and miss. That's just what it is, because what you're getting is guys that either perform well at another team but sort of on that cusp of sort of hitting the downslope, so the other team really didn't want to pay them the money that they wanted, and you figure you're getting them and you're hoping I can get at least 2 to 3 good years out of them, maybe two, That's why you sign the contracts that are, you know, these 3 and 4 year contracts are really 2 year deals, because I'm trying to get the most out of this guy in the next 2 years. If I can get 3 years out of him, that's great, you know. But with this Tennessee Titans team, the people that you have brought in already, and obviously the guys that you would draft, none of that, it means nothing if the quarterback doesn't get it right. If they don't get it right with the quarterback, if Will Levis isn't the guy that, you know, some people believe he can be, I believe he can be a hell of a quarterback in this league. Will he be an elite quarterback? I don't know, but he could be a winning quarterback in this league. If he doesn't transform into a winning quarterback this year, no matter what you're doing in regards to free agency and the draft, it's not going to work.
Right.
You're going to be a bad team. Even with the things that you've done thus far, if Will Levis hits, this is going to be a much better team. Everything is predicated on whether Will Levis plays to a level that is considered winning football. If he doesn't, I don't care who you go get. The team's not going to be good.
That's fair. The other thing that they're missing, the other reason why they're this low, which I think, again, it gets overlooked because everybody's talking about Levis. Everybody's excited about the guys they just went and signed. But when you are looking at your returning players, the core of your team that you have drafted over the last 3 or 4 years, last year's rookie class looks promising, okay. I don't know if you got any super gems. But if you look at the previous three drafts or four drafts before that, it's a lot of empty spots, right? You're not getting a whole lot. And the backbone of your roster has to come from that. And then you go back to all of the whiffs that they have, and it's hard to overcome that. They just don't have a roster built on the foundation of a good team where the icing on your cake is the free agents. Your cake is the team, the players you have drafted and developed. And that is what they're trying to overcome right now. That's why they're 150-1. Along with the Levis point, right? And Levis will be tasked to try to overcome and elevate some of these guys that haven't turned out to be great players. I mean, just go back to the guys that aren't even on the team, that Caleb Farley and Isaiah Wilson and stuff like that. It's just hard to have a great team when you whiff on a lot of those guys.
Yeah, because if you look at prior drafts, and this is why this team is in the situation that it's in now. It has nothing to do with free agency. The free agents they bring in or not, regardless of what, you know, people may think, like, we need to hit big on free agency. This, no, you build a team through the draft. You supplement it through free agency, okay? Over the last couple of years, 3 or 4 years, and I'm not putting the blame on John Robinson or Mike Vrabel. I'm just saying
those guys did a really good job in certain areas.
As a organization, the last 3 or 4 drafts, they haven't been good. A lot of these players are either they didn't pan out or they are not on the team anymore.
They're either not on the team at all or they are okay players but not like foundational players that you're going to sign to that next contract.
Exactly. They're guys that if you don't have them, then you just don't have them.
Right. And so everybody say, well, they're still going to have plenty of cap space next year. Well, all right. But why is that? It's because some of these guys they drafted 3 or 4 years ago aren't guys that you're budgeting to re-sign to the next contract. That is a problem, right?
Course.
Like, tell me the guys that they have on their roster right now that you're sitting there saying, you got to set some money aside because you got to sign that guy to the next contract. Not very many. Not very many. Are you for sure going to sign Chigakonkwo to the next contract?
Don't know.
Spears, well, maybe, but he's only been in the league for a year. But go back. You're looking at some other ones.
I'm just looking at starting at the 2021.
2021. Now, that's a group that you should now have a good idea.
Exactly.
These are guys we got to sign
3 years
the next
later,
contract.
4 years later, who's working on a second contract. And again, I am not, this is not an indictment on the past regime or anything. Yeah. I'm just saying.
This is just where they are.
This is just where they are as a team. If you are going to have sustained success, it has to be through the draft. It can't be, oh, we're going to hit it big through free agency and we're going to turn our team around. That can happen if your team is already built for the most part. Then we could supplement. But if we hadn't been building our team over the last year, the 21 draft, there's nobody in this 21 draft that has done anything for this team.
Go down the list. That's a great
Caleb exercise. Farley.
Will not be signing a second contract.
Dylan Raiden. He's
if he does, he'll be cheap. He'll be targeted as probably a backup.
Exactly. Monty Rice.
I just a guy.
Exactly. Elijah Molden.
Maybe to a cheap next deal, but not anything you got a budget for.
Dez Fitzpatrick.
Is he in the league? I don't know.
Rashard Weaver.
Just a guy.
Exactly.
Right?
Racy McMath, not even on the team no more. Brady Breeze, I don't even know where he's at.
Brady Breeze.
Exactly.
Who would making money off of his name. Maybe go back to college and get some NIL.
Okay.
I don't know.
22. Chance Campbell.
Not signed to another contract.
Theo Jackson.
Theo Jackson. Is he one of the Jackson 5? I don't know.
I don't know who he is. Janet. Was he younger than Janet? Or is he older than Janet? I don't know. Kyle Phillips.
Are you signing him to
the
next contract?
He's a role player. Yeah. Are you signing him to next contract?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
He better have a great year this year.
Chigakonkwo.
Same thing. We know what we're doing.
We know what he is. Hassan Haskins. Is he even on a team anymore? I think he still is. I don't know.
Where is he?
Injury reserve. Nicholas Petit Frere. He's a
big question mark.
Big question mark about him. Roger McCreary. He's the only guy that got drafted that year that I believe,
he's a good NFL player.
He can be signed to a second contract. Yeah. And then Treylon Burks. Well, we know about what's going on with Treylon.
X factor. Could go a number of different ways.
You're talking about –
Two
full drafts where you have no one that you can build on.
Right. That's why you have a lot of money to spend on the cap going forward, because you're not having to re-sign guys that you drafted. That's not a good formula to build a winner. That's why this next draft is huge. They got to hope
last year's draft was big, yes.
It turns into something special. That remains to be seen. But that is your answer right there.
So people don't believe that we can build a team overnight and it be sustainable. You sustain success via the draft, especially when you have your quarterback.
Yeah.
If you have your quarterback, we can build through the draft and we can sustain success.
We didn't even go over the 2020
exactly.
draft. That's no great Jake either.
Exactly.
You're
talking about 4 years of drafting where we have maybe three people that you can sign back to.
Foundational players.
Exactly.
Not enough.
That's why you cannot build this team overnight, because they haven't had the players or the personnel within the last four drafts to build on. They don't have enough of them.
All right, on that, when we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll talk about this Predator team. They've got some adversity they're dealing with here, really for the first time since this point streak started. We'll talk about it with Max Hurst, and we'll get your questions as well. If you've got some Predator questions, fire away on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more from Barrel House after this. Willie and D-Mace moving forward. Get everybody shuffling through Barrel House. Bob Cole talking trash to Derek Mason
about his Marquette
Golden Eagles. 3 seed. In fact, the rumor has it, Bob Cole, he will be watching very closely. He might even make the run up to Indianapolis if he can to see a game. Why not? Marquette's really good. They've got their guy maybe coming back, the superstar.
Uh-huh.
They're good without him, but they're really good with him. And so Marquette's a player. Mm-hmm. Also, we just saw Sebastian Bordalo, whose son Thomas will be playing tonight against the Predators. Sebastian Bordalo, an original member of the Predators, player, now the skills coach. So there's been a couple of Sharks-Preds matchups where Bordalo has either been in the minors or a scratch. But now we're going to see it head-to-head.
There we go. Let's do it.
So Sebastian will be conflicted. I'm sure he hopes Thomas scores a goal or two and the Preds win the game. We'll see what happens. So speaking of the Predators, we're joined by Max Hurst. I'm sitting in the chair that he normally sits in. He'll be here at 6 o'clock tonight to start the pregame coverage. By the way, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mates brought to you by Zen Sports. Earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up in Tennessee to bet. Max is working the TV screens the way he wants them tonight. Get him situated. I'm glad you know how to work that, Max, as I never know what channel to put it on.
Right now, thank you for having me, first of all. Secondly, I'm trying to figure out where True TV is on the arena.
So
cable.
What is on True TV that you want to see?
March Madness.
Ah.
It's a small basketball tournament.
Thinking ahead.
Oh, okay.
Thinking ahead.
I like it.
I know. D-Mace isn't used to having the Sparties on True TV. Usually they get on the TNT or
yeah,
they
we get on
TNT,
CBS, man.
You know, they move up on True TV.
We ain't about that True TV life, man.
It's only the best for my people here in Jack Daniel's Barrel House of the game. We've always got hockey on one TV and another game of interest on the other.
It's key. Any sports bar type of experience, you got to work the remotes. There's nothing worse than going into an establishment and you say, can you get this game on? I know it's on this channel. Can you get it? I'll have to ask the manager. I don't really know. It's not really what I – it's not my department. Go talk to somebody. Is this a sports bar
get
or is it not
on.
A sports bar?
Yes.
It's March Madness, doggone it. Let's go.
This is what you have to do, Willie, when you and I have traveled with the Preds and we're trying to find Vanderbilt basketball in Winnipeg.
Yeah, usually. Winnipeg is not
Winnipeg,
the best
you're
place.
Not going to get it at all.
Winnipeg is not your place to watch college basketball. That is for sure. Now, Max, this has been an amazing time to watch the Predators right now. They have played so well. But now for the first time, this is three straight games now that they have come out and had to announce that they have lost a defenseman in a week-to-week injury. So next man up, Mark Delgazzo, out, Jeremy Lauzon. So this team has had some pretty good fortune to this point, injury-wise, and now for the first time it's hitting some. For example, Alex Carrier and Jeremy Lauzon had played 691 minutes together as a defense pair. That's by far the most minutes any two defensemen had played together. So that's going to be broken up now for the next handful of games at least. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. It looks like Carrier will play some. And there's Todd Richards is the guy who runs the defenseman. There might be a little mixing and matching of the pairs tonight.
Yeah, they were very conscious today to not rush their D pairs at morning skates. So they're keeping it a secret who's going to be with who. We know the six defensemen who are playing tonight will be Roman Josi, Ryan McDonough, Alex Carrier, Luke Shen, Tyson Barrie, and Mark Delgazzo. We just don't know what the pairs could be. And I think you're right, Willie, that there probably will be some mixing and matching as they will power up and put Josi and McDonough together sometimes, even if that's not a pair. But it really stinks for Jeremy Lauzon. He had played in every game this season. This is the 69th game tonight, so he will not play in all 82. Obviously, they call him week to week, as you said, but what an immensely valuable player, having a career season for the Predators, and he plays so physically. He blocks a lot of shots. He takes punches to the face on occasion, like he did last month from Jake Middleton. It's an incredible achievement that he played 68 straight games to start the season. Gets hurt doing his thing, playing defense, gets a ton of D-zone starts. He's a really valuable player for the Preds, and it's not just going to be one player who steps into his minutes because there are going to be a lot of defensive zone face-offs that other defensemen are going to have to be out for, either with Alex Carrier or with Ryan McDonough or Luke Shen gets some of those spots, whatever it may be. But, yeah, that's a big absence, and this is the deepest they've had to go on defense at any one point this season. Delgazzo made his NHL debut in November, played five games, but they haven't had to go nine deep at once this year.
Yeah, and so it stinks for Lauzon because he had a chance, and he was on pace to break the hits record for a single season. So that's
the NHL record.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly how many games he's going to miss, but if it's week to week, that's really going to put that chance in jeopardy. He's got now the Predators record, so he'll always have that, at least for the moment. Like that's good. But he really had a shot to break the all-time record, but I don't think that's going to happen at this point. So I'm disappointed for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, career year. So hate to see it happen this time of year, but the way they've lined up these timelines, Willie, I think fair to say that if the Predators do make the playoffs, they would have the three guys who are out right now back, hopefully.
I think that's the hope. Now, the key is, what is the injury? I don't think they've disclosed anything specific on that. And depending on it, they could come back. But, of course, you push it at this time of the year, right? It's the playoffs. If you can go at all, you're going to try. But how much does it impede them, that kind of thing? But I think it's reasonable to hope that you get at least a couple of them back by the time the playoffs start. We'll see. I think they even put a timetable on Fabbro, 2 to 3 weeks. So I think that that gives him time to get back, maybe play a couple of games before you would go to the postseason if, knock on wood, they keep moving forward and make the playoffs. And so I think there's a chance you'd have all three back. Hopefully that's the case.
Do you rush them back, though, during the season? Or do you say, listen, we know more than likely you will be back for the playoffs. It seems that's the way that the Preds are trending, that they will be in the playoff, whether it's the first wild card seed, the second wild card seed, that's yet to be determined. But you don't want to try to rush these players back knowing that, okay, we need them, but we need them more importantly once we get into the playoffs.
Well, how would you say that, Max? I don't think right now they have to rush anybody.
Oh, no,
at this
not
point.
At all. Yeah.
And that's to their credit that they've built a little cushion. That's the luxury you have if you have a cushion. Now, you've still got St. Louis and Minnesota pushing. They've got to be almost lights out to make it and overtake the Predators. But I don't think the Predators have to be lights out to make it, and that's why you have a little bit of time here to try to sort it out.
Yeah, and a big reason why is Tyson Barry never got traded. We kind of assumed
how
really
huge is that?
Since
yes.
December, when he requested a trade after being a healthy scratch for the first time, that Barry was going to get traded at some point. Somebody else was going to trade him from the Predators, and the Predators were ready to make a fair trade that Tyson was in favor of whenever they were offered one, and deadline passed, and it never happened. And now all of a sudden he's playing big minutes. He played with Ryan McDonough on Saturday. Not sure if that's going to be the pair again tonight, but I thought he was very strong in the game against the Kraken. He almost scored a goal off a set faceoff play that didn't quite bounce his way off the back glass the way he would have wanted, but he's a key part of this thing now over the next couple weeks at least.
Andrew Burnett said that he thought that was as well as Tyson Barry has played all year, which is a great sign. He's enthusiastically taking the opportunity now to get back in there with regularity. And so that is going to end up being a big part of this story going forward, is the fact that they did not find anybody to trade with.
Yeah.
And
they
gave
him
position.
It may end up working out for him.
It might. Yeah. I mean, that's what he has to hope for, right? It's really all he has to go on now, but he is going to be counted on here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, he's going to play probably second pair type minutes.
Well, and we'll see how they do it. You've got Todd Richards, who runs the defense pairings. If you watch closely, I haven't figured out the system, but you know to check. In certain situations, they will put Josi and McDonough together. In certain situations, you will see Josi and Schenn together. In certain situations, Schenn and McDonough together. So now you've got to do a different formula because you've got Carrier split up to Lauzon, because those are the two guys that never were split apart. So I think you will see some different things tonight. You know, if you peak. So I don't think you will have set defense partners tonight, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I personally would love to see what Carrier with Josi looks like.
And I think you'll see that. I think you will see that some tonight.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you, Willie, that it'll be a base with some option routes for you, D-Mace.
Some option like routes.
That.
Okay, yeah. Now,
it.
And here's another thing to keep in mind. I talked to Andrew Burnett, said something that jumped out at me yesterday about Mark Delgazzo. He said he's playing as well as anybody in the AHL on defense. And I'm thinking, now that's a statement. So I asked him today, I said, you know, how do you get that information? Is that people giving that to you secondhand? He says, I watch as much as I can of Milwaukee. And so Delgazzo and Spencer Stastny have been the top pair. Stastny, of course, has been hurt. But he really does think Delgazzo has played very well since we saw him early in the season. He got that five-game stretch or so with Nashville. So that's encouraging to me that Delgazzo isn't just some filler from the AHL. They think he is a legit deserving guy of being up here. Now, beyond that, now the depth gets a little bit iffy there, because I think Milwaukee, I'm trying to figure out exactly where they are right now, but there's a couple of guys that have been banged up down there. So if you had to go deeper into the well, now you're really being tested. So keep your fingers crossed.
Do we want to talk about that before we get there, or we'll wait till we get there?
Because Gross and Gravel,
so
two guys that played a lot here last year, are both injured.
Two guys
right now
next in line who played in the NHL for the Preds last year, with Jake Livingstone and Roland McEwen.
Okay, healthy. So those would probably be the next.
But we're not
guys.
There yet. We're not there yet.
Yes.
So, but the thing I love about...
That's where depth, though, is so important.
About Delgazzo and Stastny. Last season at the end, Stastny got the call to make his NHL debut over Delgazzo. Out of training camp this year, Delgaiza was the last defenseman set down. They kept him for an extra week because he had such a great camp. Then in November, the first time they needed a defenseman, Delgaiza got the call first. Then they gave Stastny a run on the back end of that when Ryan McDonough and Luke Shen were both hurt. And now Stastny gets the call first this time, unfortunately gets injured in his first game up, and Delgaiza's right back on the train. So it's two guys with very similar profiles. They're both left-handed. They're both homegrown. They both move well. They're both 24 years old. They're both college players. Like, they have very similar profiles. So to say what you're saying, Willie, it's not really a big drop from Stastny, who's currently organizational defenseman number 8, to Delgaiza, who's currently organizational defenseman number 9.
The thing that you're missing the most is you miss the physicality and size and nastiness that Lauzon has.
But you've got a lot of forwards who can do that.
Right. You know? But to play against size in front of your net, I think, is the thing that I would be watching without Lauzon in that mix. So we'll see how they deal with that. But as far as the flow, that's what they're going to have to roll with here for now. When we come back, we'll talk more about specifically tonight's game, what to look for against the Sharks, as we talk with Max Hirsch here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. During the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to get Joe Rexroad to come on at 1 o'clock, and we'll talk brackets with him. And we'll also, you have to see what Max has got in his brackets here. Max, are you getting in the bracket competition yet?
I have completed my bracket, but I'm told no one cares.
No one cares.
Somebody cares.
Come on.
You care.
The people
Jared
in your
Stillman
pool will care.
Does not care. That's what I've heard. Jared Stillman does not want me to say my bracket on air.
But is he the end-all, be-all on brackets in America or in the world?
He's up there.
I care about your bracket. I want to hear what you got to say, and there are other people.
I have no expertise on that, but.
But there are more people that are probably like, man, I wonder what Max is thinking.
I finished last year in our
pool. So we're not listening to Willie.
Don't listen to me. I'm trying to sandbag a little bit, but I did, for a fact, finish last in our pool last year. All right, stay tuned. We're coming back with a little more Preds talk with Max Hirsch next here on 102.5 The Game. The Wall of Voodoo from Max's playlist here on 102.5 The Game. Talking Predators with Max Hirsch, who will be at the helm tonight for our pregame coverage, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. here at Barrel House. The Predators take on the San Jose Sharks tonight, and we'll see if Nashville can get the point streak to 15. That would be a franchise high tied with the 2017-2018 team that ended up winning the President's Trophy. I believe that streak, if I remember correctly, was a little earlier in the year where they rolled off 15 in a row. So we'll see what happens tonight. And, Max, it is interesting because Andrew Burnett keeps talking about you got to move forward. Let's keep hunting down the teams in front. They're actually ahead of both Vegas and the L.A. Kings at the moment. So that is another way you can get in. There's now two wild card spots to get into, and not just one where it looked like that was going to be the case for weeks. And you still got St. Louis and Minnesota both playing very well right now, trying to play catch-up below the Predators. So nothing is etched in stone yet, but the Predators, with each passing game, if you keep getting points, it just makes that road a lot shorter.
What has it been now, Willie? 10 years of this wild card playoff format that I don't think anybody likes, and yet they don't get rid of it?
Not exactly. I think they tweaked it in 2017-18. If I remember, that was the first time that they did the brackets. Or maybe it was the year before. Maybe it was the year before. 2016-17 maybe was the first year that they did the brackets.
I just think there was nothing wrong with the 1-8. And right now, the Predators are the first wild card, and they're the only team they can go up to is a three-way tie. They're 9 points behind the three-way tie atop the Central, Winnipeg, Avs, and Stars. If it were the 1-8 and the divisions were crossing, the Preds would be 2 points back of fifth in the conference right now. But because of the wild card, they can't advance from what I would refer to as the 7 seed.
Yeah,
unless
you're right.
They make a big climb, which is possible.
D-Mace brought this up the other day. That is how it used to be, and that's how the NBA did it for a long time, where it was just straight up, other than the division winners, right, 1-8, the next groups. And if you're in the top 8, you made the playoffs. There was no quote-unquote wild card. I do think that was probably about 10 years ago that they changed that. I got to go back and look at that.
Does anybody like the wild cards? I feel like they got negative reviews from the beginning.
They got into the bracket thing, right? And they wanted fans to be able to fill out a bracket because they used to have 1 through 8, and they would reseed after each round. So, D-Maze, what do you think is the best way to determine the champ?
To me, it should be brackets. It shouldn't be – well, I guess the NFL sort of does it that way, where
they reseed, right?
After the first round, because the higher seed gets to play the lower seed. But there's not, you know, it works that way because it's been that way forever.
Right.
You know, when you start changing things, you know, because I looked at it and I told Willie the other day, I'm like, well, we know they're not going to catch the top three in a division. We know they're not going to get, but they're in a position to where they are. I think it was better than a fourth-place team, and I think you just said that, better in regards to point-wise. But they still were the first wild-card team. That doesn't make sense to me. If you have a better record than, say, the second or third-place team in a different division, then you should be seated higher right. than them. But it's not that way.
And if the Preds were in the Pacific Division exactly. instead of the Central, they would be – 2 points behind the Oilers, and if the season ended right now, the Oilers, they've played fewer games than the Preds, but uh-huh. they'd have home ice advantage in the first round. The Oilers would.
Yeah, and the reason they did it was A, for brackets, and B, to try to cut down, especially for the Western Conference teams, on the amount of travel that you do. But the thing is, now you have Colorado and Arizona in the Central.
And Winnipeg.
It's not like it cuts it down a lot.
The divisions are based on time zone, not geography. So I just thought it was and the Leafs,
so in the West
you're
going to have a lot of travel anyway, and in the East you don't have a lot of travel right. no matter
the
how
Leafs
you slice
and the Bruins play every year. The Panthers and the Lightning play every year. The Islanders play the Rangers almost every year. So I mean, if they want the same teams to play each other every year, then that's what it's for. But I think the Preds will have an interesting matchup no matter what.
Because to me, they should be ranked above the Kings, but they're not.
Right, and there's no way to catch them.
Exactly, there's no way to catch them. You will have more points than them, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, it shows you every year that you think the Central Division is maybe falling off a little bit. It's still, I think, the best division in hockey, the toughest division in hockey. So they're getting this done in that. Now let's talk about the Sharks tonight. They, Max, have obviously really struggled here. They've traded off. They're now... They've stripped it down to the wood, basically, now. They traded off Anthony Duclair. They traded Tomas Hertl, who was hurt anyway. So they're not going to look a ton different than they did a couple of weeks ago when the team was in San Jose. But so this is one where you have to stay focused here, keep doing your thing, and you've got a great opportunity. But you got to hold serve because if you look around the league, for example, the next game Minnesota plays is against Anaheim tonight. Anaheim hasn't been able to beat anybody here recently. So you have to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah, so during the Preds' 14-game point streak, since that started, the Preds are 12-0-2 in the point streak. The Sharks during that time are 1-11-2. They've lost 14 of 16 games since All-Star Week, which is over a full month, and they are 0-4 on their current road trip that ends tonight. And they just lost to the Blackhawks in a battle for league-wide last place. So they led in that game.
They led 2-0, and they still led 2-1 midway through the third, and then they had a meltdown, and the Blackhawks won. It's just those numbers you threw out there just scare me because eventually they're going to win a couple more games. It's just going to happen. This is the way the NHL works. So it's interesting that the Sharks started off horrendously. Nashville played them in that stretch. Then they went through a stretch where they were somewhat competitive for a few months based on what they had. Now they've traded off some guys, including a goalie that was playing a lot for them and playing well, Kaapo Kähkönen. And so on paper, this is a good matchup for Nashville. But among the players that we will see for the Sharks tonight is Thomas Bortolo. We just saw his dad, Sebastian, who was an original Predator that works for the team as a skills coach. It will be fun to see him tonight.
Yeah, so Thomas Bortolo, his son, is 22 years old. He's a second-year pro, played college at Michigan for a couple years.
Boom,
D-Base. the crazy part about his quote-unquote local tie for Thomas is that he never lived here because he was born a year after Sebastian stopped playing for the Preds, and then his dad's coaching position up until 2 summers ago was a remote travel type position, the job that Mark Borowiecki is doing now. So Thomas Bortolo never lived here, but obviously feels an immense connection to the area. His dad lives here and is on the Predators assistant coaching staff. And he also said this morning that when his dad, Sebastian, played for SC Bern in Switzerland, there was a young defenseman by the name of Roman Josi on the team, yep, and that he would come over to the Bortolo house and play mini sticks with Thomas.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. SC Bern was amazing. I love, too, and anytime you say University of Michigan, it's automatic. It just comes right out of him.
Yeah.
It just starts booing.
I don't care what sport it is, anything. No.
As soon as you say
University of Michigan, boo.
Yep, the button is pushed at D-Mace's DNA. Well, Max, thanks for coming by tonight, and you'll get. I've kept this chair nice and warm for you when it comes to 6 o'clock.
Thank you, Willie.
Jared sits in the chair that you sit in, right?
Well, normally we sit in nice dining room table chairs that have been
stolen,
have gone missing. Yeah.
I don't want to say stolen, but they've gone missing. They could be.
They've been misplaced.
But yeah. I do have some good news, Willie. I did not find True TV on the cable, but I did find your favorite show.
Okay. Well,
enjoy.
With no sound, Max will figure a way to get the sound.
I know all the lines.
Pumped
don't
into
worry.
His earphones. All right. When we come back, Joe Rexroth is going to join us, and we'll talk a little March Madness. We'll look at his brackets. We'll ask about the SEC team's pathways. Stay tuned. We're coming back here on 102.5 The Game.